Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm excited to have you along for the ride. Hi, everyone. Today, I'm talking about sabbatical boundaries. Now, when you think broadly about planning your sabbatical, the idea of setting boundaries might not sound as fun and exciting as planning trips and research projects and all the fun things that you want to do on your sabbatical. But I don't think I can say enough or stress enough how important this step is to having a successful sabbatical. So here's why I care so much about boundaries for sabbaticals. If you spend time planning your sabbatical with intention, you've got a great idea of what you want to accomplish and how you want to accomplish it. Your boundaries are the guardrails that allow you to preserve that time and carry out your plan. If you don't put those guardrails in place, requests are going to gradually start chipping away at the time that you've preserved. Now, many departments and colleagues are really good about respecting sabbatical boundaries, and you could probably just close your email inbox the day your sabbatical starts and not check your email until you come back. In reality, I don't think that is what most academics are doing. I think most of us are staying in touch at least somewhat. You may not be going to faculty meetings or kind of staying on top of department politics, but it's probably likely that you have doctoral students you're in touch with, collaborators you are working with on research projects. You're checking your email to see if you got that revise and resubmit. So if you're someone who is going to just completely sign off and not have contact with anything work-related during your sabbatical, then you probably don't need to listen to this episode. And that's great because I think disconnecting that way is amazing. If you're someone who feels like I'm probably still going to need to be somewhat connected, then I'm going to give you advice for how you can create those guardrails, create boundaries for your sabbatical that help preserve your time and your energy, quite frankly. I don't want you getting weighed down by all of these requests during your sabbatical and ending up feeling guilty and overwhelmed and like all you did was make decisions and you let everyone down. So we set boundaries proactively so that we don't have to devote time and energy to making decisions in the moment. And let me tell you, so I've already told you why I think boundaries are so important. I nearly went into my sabbatical with completely the wrong idea about boundaries. And luckily, I had a mentor who helped me think differently about boundaries. And so part of what I want to do here is share with you what I learned, because the more I talk to people about boundaries, the more I realize that most people are not approaching setting boundaries in this way. So for most of us, and for me, we assume that a boundary is, okay, you know, my sabbatical starts on May 16th because my contract ends on May 15th. On the 16th, I will put up an email autoresponder saying I'm gone for the semester of the year and I will reply to your email when I get back. That's helpful. And that is certainly what I do for like spring break and winter break. But my argument to you is that you actually need to do more than that if you really want to feel confident that you can disengage and not feel like you have to respond to the emails that will inevitably come in during your sabbatical. So what do I mean by that? The email autoresponder is useful for, you know, the random person who has no prior connection to you, who needs something or has a question and doesn't realize that you're on sabbatical, right? So they see your autoresponder and they say, okay, Bethany's on sabbatical. I will try back, you know, in August or whatever, right? It's less helpful though if you are planning on checking email, continuing to support students, continuing to work on revisions to journal articles, continuing to stay engaged in some regard, right? Because then what's going to happen is people will get your autoresponder, but you're also checking your emails and you're constantly making decisions about who do I need to respond to? Should I take this meeting, set up this meeting or not? If we think through all of those things in advance, we can save you a lot of time and energy and effort. So the autoresponder is not sufficient, is the argument that I want to make to you. And I definitely thought it was going to be sufficient, but here's what my mentor suggested instead. And here's why I changed my mind. My mentor asked me kind of benignly, I think this was like February or March, and my sabbatical was going to begin in the summer. She said, oh, have you talked to your students about your sabbatical? And I said, well, no, but I will, right? And I imagined having a meeting with each of my doctoral students and maybe having a meeting with my collaborators. And I don't know, vaguely telling them something. I really had not at that point thought it through or even thought of like what I would tell them, right? I knew that I needed to detach and I needed a break, but I hadn't really thought through, you know, the consequences of telling a student who was trying to meet their program milestones that I couldn't meet as regularly versus a student who was in their second year and just kind of doing coursework and wouldn't need as much support. So what my mentor said is, you know, what would be really helpful is if you think about each student that you have, what they need, and how much you want to be available to them. That seems so simple, but it really shifted the way I was thinking about my sabbatical boundaries. I mean, I really hadn't thought about my boundaries before then. I had not given any thought to the fact that I wouldn't need to give the same amount of time during my sabbatical to a second year student as I would to a student writing their dissertation or a student going through earlier program milestones. My mentor also said, you know, for your student who's going through milestones, maybe there's someone else on the committee who can support her more closely for a little bit so that you can really detach and disengage. She also said, you know, I think you should talk to your collaborators in the same way, like think through each collaboration and sort of each group of people or person who's going to need you for something. Think about what your boundary is going to be, write it down, and then tell them. I was like, oh my gosh, yes, this makes so much sense. Like, tell them in advance so you're setting an expectation. I don't know. It may sound so obvious to you, but it really had not occurred to me before then that I should be thinking this through and doing that legwork in advance. And so that just completely shifted the way that I approach boundaries. And that has influenced the way that I approach boundary setting with my sabbatical coaching clients. We have a week that is dedicated to setting boundaries. It's usually after people have made their full plan. And now we say, okay, what are the boundaries we need to put in place for you to have this really transformative sabbatical? And what comes up a lot is I think initially there is a lot of resistance to setting boundaries because of guilt, right? So people feel like, but I have to be available to my students and I have to, you know, review journal articles or do this service to my field while I'm away. The truth is, in academia, I think there are not a lot of things we have to do. And so what I work with my clients on and what I would encourage you to do is when you're noticing that you're feeling that sense of, but I have to, there's no other way, to really take a step back and think like, do I have to, or am I telling myself that I have to? Let's start with the example of doctoral students, because I think it's the easiest, or, you know, any students that you advise and supervise. when we treat them not as a whole group of students and say, okay, well, I have to meet with my students every 2 weeks, right? Because that's just what I've been doing up until now. When we separate them out and think really carefully about individual students, or maybe, you know, you have a couple advisees who are in their second year, and so they have similar needs, then we can begin to be really clear and realistic about how much those students actually need from us. And guess what? You get to set the boundary, right? You get to communicate to them your availability instead of letting their needs dictate how much you are available to them. So I had a client who was meeting with doctoral students every week. And we were talking about this and talking about her plan for her sabbatical. And I said, you know, do you find that a week is enough for students to really, you know, meet? And then presumably the idea is that they're working on something, some sort of product that they're turning around to you. If you're meeting every week, when does that work happen and when do you get to review it? And she was like, oh, right. And maybe I don't have to meet with them every week. Maybe we meet every other week or every 3 weeks. And then that gives them a chance to take action on the things we discussed, send something back to me for me to read it, and then we meet again. Right. So I would encourage you to think, even now before your sabbatical, are the meetings you're having with students, is the frequency of interaction warranted? What are you accomplishing? Could you accomplish more if you didn't have as frequent interaction, but you each had time to process the outcomes of your interaction in a little more detail and in a way that you're not rushing? So if you have a sabbatical coming up, here's what I'd recommend. And I'm going to go through the steps to planning your boundaries and putting them in place. But when it comes to students, think about those students' needs. Think about how available you want to be to your students, and then determine the cadence for meeting with them or checking in. And I would say for your sabbatical and any time, the goal should be for you to limit the cognitive lift for yourself when you meet with them. So have your students send you something to read in advance or send a meeting agenda that catches you up on, you know, reminds you about what you discussed previously and makes clear the direction and the outcome of this meeting. Again, this is a place where you can set and hold boundaries. You can tell your students, you know, each time we meet, I need to have a written product from you. And this would be for students who are like writing their dissertation or moving toward a milestone. You're not meeting just to meet, you're meeting to discuss a tangible product. And so you determine the boundary that works for you. So if you're meeting with a student on a Thursday, I need to see this writing by Monday so I can review it, and that will help frame our conversation. And then here's the hard part. You have to decide if the student doesn't comply with the boundary or the expectation that you've set, are you still going to have that meeting? Right. And this is hard, and this is where people feel mean, but I kind of compare it to parenting a toddler, right? Or kids in general. If you don't hold your boundary, then the kid is going to think that you will never hold the boundary. So the way that we create norms for interactions or enforce rules and kind of help make our lives smoother and easier is by setting boundaries and then sticking to them, so that the people we're interacting with, in this case, maybe your doctoral students, understand that the boundary is firm and that you are going to hold it, even if it means they don't get to meet with you that week, which would be disappointing. But my guess is that then they would send you whatever they need to send you prior to their next meeting, right? And that preserves your time and energy, because you don't have to have a meeting that is unguided and where the outcome is unclear. So that is one example of how I now approach boundary setting. It's proactive and it's differentiated. Okay. So proactive is important, because just because you're on sabbatical, people are not going to stop asking for things from you. And it is going to be very draining if every time you open your email, and I'm assuming most of you are going to open your email, you have all these requests coming in and you start to feel resentful. You're like, why are they asking for my time? Don't they know I'm on sabbatical? If you set the expectation ahead of time, I think people will generally respect that. And then you don't have to go through that cycle of draining your emotional energy and feeling resentful because people are asking for things. The other thing is, if you're proactive, then things aren't even going to hit your inbox. So here's one example of something I advise my clients to do. Just because you're on sabbatical does not mean you will not get asked to review journal articles, grant proposals, etc. I personally think that unless you are on an editorial board or there's some really strong reason that you need to be continuing to engage in that service, you should not be reviewing journal articles or grant proposals during your sabbatical. I think the easiest decision in this case is to just say, nope, I am not doing it. So you decide once, you just say, I'm not doing any journal reviews. So then any request that hits your inbox, you don't even have to look at it. You just say no. Some people say, well, I'll only do the ones that are really interesting to me. What I would encourage you to just think about when you get that request, look at it. Maybe you read the abstract. Look at when it's due. Look at the plan you have for that next month. You know, usually there's like a 4-week turnaround, at least in the social sciences. I think in the natural sciences, it's a lot quicker. And imagine the amount of time you're going to have to use from the schedule you've already planned to meet that deadline and do that review. And then also remember, if there's a revision, you'll probably be asked to review that again. So this is going to be a potentially months, or I mean, in the case of education journals, sometimes a years long process. Is that what you want to devote your energy to right now during your sabbatical? I think it is very legitimate to say, no, I don't want to devote my energy to this, and to just not do it, even if it's something very interesting to you. Now, one way you can avoid the request even coming in, so you don't even have to follow through on the decision you already made, is if there are journals that you regularly review for, you can go into your profile on the journal and mark yourself as unavailable for a period of time. I did this before my sabbatical, so I probably still got a few odd requests, but from journals that I normally might have said no to anyway, because they're not journals that I publish in. But I didn't get any requests because I marked myself as unavailable. And I gave myself a couple months buffer after my sabbatical so that I wouldn't, as I was getting back into the swing of teaching and normal work life, be bombarded by these requests. And trust me, people are still going to ask you. I remember in one of my episodes, I think it was the second episode that I recorded with my colleague David about his sabbatical in Florence, he was talking about not reviewing NSF proposals. And this was at a time that things were sane in the federal government. And so reviewing NSF proposals was a thing. And he felt nervous about backing away from that because he thought, well, what if they never ask me again? Spoiler alert, they still asked him after his sabbatical to review proposals, even though he didn't review any during his sabbatical. So it's fine. Trust me, you're going to have plenty of service that you can do when you come back from sabbatical. But one of the ways that you can preserve your energy and your focus for your sabbatical is by making proactive decisions about what you anticipate is going to come up during your sabbatical and how you will respond. So being proactive and then differentiating, right? And so that's the example I just gave about the students. You don't have to have the same boundary for all the people who intersect with your life on sabbatical. So what I want you to do as you think about setting boundaries is think really carefully about the different types of things that are bound to come up during your sabbatical and the boundary you're going to set for each one. So let me now just reinforce why it's so important, right? Of being proactive, deciding in advance, and setting these differentiated boundaries. I gave you the example of kind of forecasting ahead. If I say yes to this journal review, what is that going to mean for my time, energy, and commitments? I think as academics, we tend to be unrealistic about our time and unrealistic about how long things are going to take us. So you think, okay, I'll just say yes to this one thing. It's pretty small. Sure, I'll do it. Those yeses add up, right? So every time you say yes to something, you are saying no to something else. So if you think, okay, I'll do this one meeting, or I'll do this one journal review, or I'll meet with this one student who has randomly reached out to me, those add up to real time. And I think what can happen is before you know it, your calendar is full. You're just in this mode of being responsive where your day is dictated by other people's schedules and requests, and you move away from the plan that you laid out with intention. So if I haven't already convinced you, hopefully by now I have, that boundaries are so important to having the sabbatical that you need and the sabbatical you want. There is going to be so much time when you get back from sabbatical for meetings and all the things you think you should do. And, you know, I think the thing is that when you've been working so hard, let's say this is your first sabbatical after getting tenure, you've been working so hard to position yourself for tenure, to be a good colleague and citizen, to, you know, make connections in your field so that your external letters are good. It's very natural to feel like you can't say no to anything because it might be career breaking in some way. And when you are feeling like it's very hard to say no, here's what I would recommend asking yourself. First, do I have any data about how this has worked out in the past? Sometimes in the moment, it's hard to remember that we have examples of times that something has worked or not worked, right? So for me, what that often looks like is, okay, this colleague and I are going to submit a grant proposal and it just sounds really great and it's really amazing. And oh yeah, it's going to take a ton of my time, but it's going to be so worth it if we get it right, even though we only have like a 3-week turnaround. If I stop and say, okay, do I have any data about how this has worked out before? I can say, oh my gosh, I remember the last time we did this and I was exhausted. I didn't have time to plan my classes. So I felt like I was always winging it. I was sleep deprived. And guess what? We applied for the new grant before we even had a chance to publish anything from the previous project. And so then I just felt like I was always behind because all I'm doing is starting new things and I'm never finishing other ones. And it ended up just being this total distraction that derailed me for a month. Right. So that's hypothetical, but honestly, I did decide this year to not apply for a grant for those reasons, because I just realized like I've done this before and I'm the only one telling myself that I have to do this. No one else is actually telling me I have to do it. And so you can look at the data, or, you know, maybe a positive example is someone asks you to do something on your sabbatical and you're like, oh, I mean, I just feel like I really should be on that committee. That, let's say it's, you know, your dean is asking you to be on a college-wide search committee and you're like, I really want to impress him. I would just feel so badly if I didn't do it. Like, I feel like I should, or I'm the only one who has this expertise that I could lend to it. Try to think back to other requests that you've said no to, and hopefully you have examples, right? The time that you said, no, I can't teach that class, or I can't chair that committee. What happened? Was it catastrophic? I mean, hopefully not, but many times we do have some examples we can draw on that show us, you know, I said no to this, or I decided to do something that people wouldn't have necessarily expected me to do, and everything worked out fine. Or I decided not to go to a conference and I didn't even miss it. So sometimes we build things up in our head and tell ourselves that there are going to be these like dire consequences if we say no, or like don't do things in the way that we would normally do them. And often those are just stories we tell ourselves. So first, ask yourself what data you already have. The other thing to ask yourself is like, what is the worst that could happen? So if I do not review any articles for any journals while I'm on sabbatical, what is the worst that could happen? maybe you get criticized in your annual review that you're not doing enough service. I don't know. Maybe you have a friend or a close colleague who's on one of those editorial boards and they get a little annoyed with you because you're not available. I can't imagine extremely dire consequences. So sometimes it's just having that reality check, like, wait, what's the worst that could happen? And if the worst is not that bad, then maybe you can make the hard decision and set the boundary. I want to leave you with some practical tips for setting sabbatical boundaries. So this is a framework you can use as you go through the process of creating your boundaries. The first thing I want you to do is identify the things that you think are going to come up during your sabbatical or the commitments that you already have that are going to be affected by your sabbatical. So the way to do this, honestly, is if you keep a calendar, look back through your calendar. Like, what recurring meetings do you have? Are you on a board where you have quarterly meetings? Think about your students. Think about the other things that come up, over the course of a regular semester or year, and write them all down. So the writing them down part is important. Let's not just make this a hypothetical and imagine the things that are going to come up, because when you write them down, then that helps with the next phases. And so the next thing you need to do is decide your boundary. I like to do this in a chart. Just make a table in Word or in an Excel spreadsheet. So in the first column, you list the commitment. In the second column, you identify the boundary that you want to set. And this is one of the hardest parts, right? Because it takes a little creativity. If you are someone who is used to always being available and always saying yes to everything, it's going to be hard to think about what boundary you even can set or how available you even need to be. And I will say that this is something that is really powerful in coaching sessions. And I think my clients have a lot of breakthroughs in this area when we work together, because I can ask questions and come up with ideas that it's often hard for my clients to come up with on their own because they're so ingrained in their reality. As an outsider, I can ask a question that just kind of puts things in a different perspective. So if you're listening to this and you're like, I have no idea how to set boundaries, get in touch with me. Let's work together on it. Okay. So you're going to decide what boundaries you need to set in advance, and it may not be perfect the first go around. You might want to work on this one day, let it, you know, set it down for a few days and come back to it, let the ideas percolate, see how they feel. The next part is also hard. You have to make a plan for communicating those boundaries. Or I should say, this part is not as hard. Making the plan to communicate the boundary is not as hard as actually communicating the boundary. So here are things to think about. Does this boundary require a meeting? Does it require an email? Does it require me going into the journals, you know, system and marking myself as unavailable? Think about, like, what is the level of engagement from you that needed to set that boundary? If you have a research collaborator, that probably needs a meeting, right? Doctoral students probably need a meeting, doctoral advisees. Undergrads who may ask for a letter of recommendation, I think that can be an email, right? Unless it's someone that you closely supervise. So think about, like, how does this need to be communicated? And then also think about, how open are you to, like, negotiating the boundary, right? So if you have a meeting with doctoral students and they panic completely because you say, we can only meet twice a semester while I'm on sabbatical, how are you going to respond? And are you willing at all to negotiate that based on their need? I would say try to think this through in advance and stick to your boundary, because if you negotiate with everyone you set a boundary with, you're going to find yourself back in that situation I described earlier, where your calendar is totally full of meetings and you don't get to actually do the things you need to do during your sabbatical. And so I would be really clear in those, you know, in those emails and those meetings. And if you have a meeting with someone, then I would suggest sending a follow-up email where you clarify what you discuss so that they have something in writing that they can go back to. I'll give you one idea that a client of mine came up with that worked really well. And this was in relation to meeting with students during her sabbatical. She decided she was only going to have meetings with students on Wednesdays. So she actually set up a Calendly account and you know, I think you can do a free account that allows you to have one type of meeting. And she told her students, like, I'm available to meet on Wednesdays. I can meet with you X number of times per month or semester. She let them know what she expected from them in advance of a meeting. So like her doctoral students, she wanted to see like some piece of writing and an agenda X number of days in advance. And then she gave them the Calendly link and she was able to set her availability. They were able to book a meeting with her. And this was the important part. She's like, and what I decided is if all the meetings are taken for the day, and they can't meet with me on the day they want to, then they just have to schedule for the next week. So you're not having this like email back and forth trying to find a date. The students know the expectation, they have the link, and you make it no big deal. I mean, she was available if something really urgent came up, but let's face it, there aren't that many urgent things. And sometimes we also have to train our students to that we're not always going to be there to solve their urgent problem, that maybe they need to work on a solution themselves before scheduling a meeting with us, right? So I offer that to you as one way of enforcing the boundary that is a little more passive on your part, right? So you don't have to do the scheduling part, which I think is really nice for a sabbatical. Okay, so you plan how to communicate. Then you have to communicate it, right? You have to follow through. And this is so hard because people may be surprised. You may be someone who has like really never set a boundary before. And so people are surprised that suddenly you're setting a clear boundary and you're limiting your availability. I just want to say that it is perfectly okay and reasonable and good for you and good for your students or your collaborators or your colleagues for you to have boundaries. So go into those conversations or write that email, those emails, knowing that it is 100% valid for you to set boundaries and protect your time during your sabbatical. You will be probably more available when you come back from sabbatical. They will live, they will survive without constant access to you during your sabbatical. And most importantly, I think you need those boundaries to make the most of your sabbatical. And if you want to come back feeling rejuvenated and energized and able to make your highest level of impact in your role, you need to have that time guarded for yourself to do the things that you need to do. So then the last thing, you have, you know, identified your commitments, you've decided on your boundaries, you've made a plan to communicate them, you have communicated them. And then the last thing, of course, also the hardest, maybe this is all hard because everything I'm saying is the hardest thing. You have to actually hold those boundaries. And I'm not going to tell you again why it's important. I think it's fairly obvious that if we are not consistent in holding our boundaries, then people will not take those boundaries seriously. And that is going to drain your time and energy away from the things that you wanted to prioritize during your sabbatical. So I hope this has been helpful. I hope it hasn't been too heavy-handed. I'll say again, boundaries are just so important for sabbatical. And one of the reasons I love working on boundaries in sabbatical planning is because often it helps people start to think about the way that they could carry forward some of those boundaries or carry forward the idea of having boundaries into their post-sabbatical personal and professional life. So I think about boundary setting as kind of a muscle that you have to exercise in order to get stronger. So most of us, well, I'll speak for myself. I used to be someone who would just, you know, you come to me with an opportunity or ask me to do something. More often than not, I just say yes and figure it out later, right? It's like a knee-jerk response. I haven't really thought about how this fits into my schedule or how much time it'll take me, but I'm a people pleaser, so I say yes. What I had been practicing prior to my sabbatical was not saying yes right away. So it was kind of the first step is just saying, that's interesting. Let me think about it. Now, after my sabbatical, because I'm so much more clear about how I want my career to feel on a daily basis, like how many hours a day I want to work, how much time I want to have in meetings, I am way better at setting boundaries, and I'm also not saying yes to things right away. So you can use your sabbatical as a testing ground for boundaries. And once you see how great it feels during sabbatical to have boundaries in place, I think you're going to want to think about how to be better at setting boundaries and expectations post sabbatical. So I will leave you with that. I also have a blog post on this topic, so I will link to that in the show notes if you are someone who prefers to see this all written down. And I hope that you set some really good boundaries for your sabbatical and that you are consistent in holding them, because it is going to make a huge difference in you having the sabbatical that you need and you want.